Okay, gentlemen, we began the conversation yesterday on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis, where the Mishnah says that you cannot put an egg next to an urn in order to be migalgel that egg, in order to make that egg some sort of cooked. And we had a few conversations based on this. The Gemara tells us that if a person does this, the person is chayiv achatos. In other words, it's an issa d'oraisa, and the Gemara compares this to the case of an individual who cooks a sardine or a tuna or some sort of fish. So the Gemara basically says that just like over there you're chayiv, here also you are chayiv, and we presented two possibilities in the Gemara. Either what the Gemara means is that we're talking about the object that's being cooked, or what the Gemara is focused on is the method of cooking. We also had a conversation yesterday, which I'm going to pick up on today, regarding how we translate the word shetisgalgel. Does shetisgalgel mean that the egg becomes a hard-boiled egg, and as a hard-boiled egg, it actually spins? Or does tisgalgel mean that the egg gets mixed in together? It somehow is like a softer boiled egg, and the egg white and the yolk somehow mix together. If you want a source for this idea, if you want to think I'm crazy about soft boiled eggs, that the albumin mixes with the yolk. So if you look in the Parish of the Bar Tanura in the second parak of Uktzin in the sixth Mishnah, the Bar Tanura learns the idea of tisgalgel in precisely those terms. Okay, so this was our conversation. What does the word shetisgalgel mean? Is it fully cooked or is it partially cooked? That was the basic conversation. We also noted that although Rashi has the comment that the egg is shetitzlik tzas, Rashi says that you're only partially cooking it. That's the simple reading of Rashi. Nonetheless, we had what I consider a creative read of Rashi, that what Rashi says tzitzlik tzas, Rashi means that the cooking on the egg is not completely necessary because the egg was edible beforehand. Full cooking is I take something inedible, I make it edible. Perhaps what Rashi means of tzitzlik tzas is I am taking something which previously was edible and I am just making it more edible. This is all a review of what we did yesterday. Now, the Gemara is interesting because the Gemara cites a Mishnah on Daf Kuf Mem Hei Amud Beis. The Mishnah on Kuf Mem Hei Amud Beis introduces the principle and halacha of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, and the Mishnah says Kol Shebab Bechamin Me'er Shabbos Shorin Oso Bechamin B'Shabbos. Anything that came in hot water. It's like a funny expression in the Mishnah, right? This is what's quoted over here in Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. I'm just turning to Kuf Mem Hei Amud Beis because there's like one line that I wanna bring out from the Gemara over there. But the Mishnah is like a funny expression. Anything that's above the Chamin in Erev Shabbos, anything that came in contact with hot water before Shabbos, you're allowed to soak it in hot water on Shabbos. Right? If I'd be writing this sentence, I would say, Kosha nispashel mutar levashlo. Whatever was cooked, you're allowed to recook. Yet the Mishnah uses a different expression. It says something about kosher bobechamin, anything that came in hot water. And in fact, Rashi there on Kuf Mem Hei Amud Beis, Rashi writes kosher bobechamin. Rashi says kilomar shenispashel, meaning it was already cooked. Right? So it's a little strange that we're using this term. Take that point, hold it. I'll try to get back to it beforehand. Now, it happens that Rashi by us has a slightly different expression. Nadia, is that a hand up or that was just stretching? Stretching. Okay, exercise is important. So Rashi on Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph has a slightly different expression. Rashi says Kol Sheba B'Chamin means Kol Maluach Sheba B'Chamin Me'erev Shabbos. Rashi says I'm talking about any salty item that came in contact with hot water before Shabbos. I read Rashi to mean that when something is really salty, it's not edible, right? It's so salty. Remember, in their times, they did not have refrigeration. So they would salt items as a means of preserving it, right? We salt it to add flavor. They would salt things to preserve it. But when you're preserving something, you're putting a considerable amount of salt on it so that it will last for a while, it's extremely salty. So what you do is you put it in hot water before Shabbos, which is basically a way of getting rid of the salt, but it's also, in that process, a way of softening the fish or the meat or the like. No? When you think about it, when you're preserving something for a long time, again, this is Judaism according to Schwartz, so I'm not sure I'm right. When I preserve something for a long time, it becomes really hard. If I put a ton of salt on it, right, it's really hardened. It's like beef jerky. If I wanna eat it now and not like break my teeth, I immerse it in hot water. And by immersing it in hot water, it softens the meat. Once that was done on Erev Shabbos, so then I can do it again on Shabbos. And that's what Rashi on Daf Lamites says. Somehow, I'm not sure why, but Rashi on Lamites seems to contradict Rashi on Kuf Mem He. Rashi on Lamites is saying that Kol Sheba B'Chamin means not that it was cooked. It's entirely possible that this item was not cooked at all, but it was b'chamin. B'chamin in the sense of it was previously salted, and then you soak it in hot water, and you get that salt off, and you soften it. And then, because it's already softened, so you're allowed to put it in hot water again on Shabbos, you are not fixing that food because that food was already edible since you softened it Erev Shabbos. Now, if I am correct, gentlemen, Jake Stern, you have a question. Let me just finish my sentence and then I'll let you ask your question. If I'm correct, so then the Mishnah on Kuf Mem He, as understood by Rashi and Lamites, is not teaching me a rule of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. On Lamites, Rashi tells me, I'm not talking about an item that was previously cooked. I'm talking about an item that was previously salted and then soaked to soften it. And then once it was salted and soaked, I'm allowed to put it in the hot water because cooking means improving an item. And I'm not really improving it when I put it in the hot water now, because whatever improvement happened to this piece of fish or meat already happened on Erev Shabbos, so I'm not accomplishing much when I soak it on Shabbos. That, I think, is the explanation of Rashi. Jake Stern, it's time for your rebuttal.
So me and Avery discussed this at length, and he attacked me for this one. How in the world could the topic of the conversation of the Gemara not be about Bishul? Or is everybody trying to say this is a form of Bishul?
I am trying to suggest or to put out on the table that our Gemara is not dealing with Bishul at all. I'm presenting this as a possibility. That it is not, again, this is Rashi on Daf Lamed Tes. The Beis Yosef, by the way, noticed this Rashi. And the Beis Yosef also pointed out that there's a bit of a contradiction between the Rashi. because Rashi and Kuf Memhe says it. And the Beis Yosef notes that it's not just Rashi, it's a Rambam as well. Because if I read the Rambam in Perek Chof Beis Halacha Ches, the Rambam chapter 22, law 8, the Rambam writes, Davar shenit bashel kodem ha-Shabbos, o nishre b'chamin mufnei ha-Shabbos, even though right now it's cold, you're allowed to soak it again on Shabbos. The Rambam writes, something that was cooked before Shabbos, or it was soaked in hot water. Now, what does that mean, or it was soaked in hot water? That could mean that the issue at hand is, are you improving the food item? This food item was not really cooked. It was soaked in hot water. Perhaps it was soaked in hot water in a way that is not halachically cooking it. Perhaps it is not halachically cooked, but nonetheless, I'm allowed to soak it in hot water on Shabbos because I'm not really changing things. Meaning, Rashi on Lamed Tes and the Rambam Perchof Beis Halacha Ches are not saying anything about Bishul Achar Bishul, right? Because I'm not really talking about cooking it. I'm not really talking about cooking it the same time, and that's probably why the Mishnah does not use expressions of bishul. It uses funny terms, kosher bo bechamin, shorin oso bechamin, because perhaps I'm not talking about bishul at all. However, both Rashi and the Rambam have a contradiction, right? We noted the contradiction in the Rambam, we know the contradiction in Rashi, and within the Rambam there's a contradiction because in Perek Test, when the Rambam presents these halachos, he's clearly talking about Ein Bishol Achar Bishol. So, again, in all likelihood, both explanations are true. Slowly, that was you, Jake, speaking?
Doesn't Rashi on Lamed Ches also say the top of conversation is Bishol?
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm inclined... you're saying that with respect to the egg, the conversation is Bishul. Is that correct?
Which is correct, which would mean if we're trying to bring a raya from about the egg from the Mishnah.
From the tuna.
Right.
You're breaking up, which I don't know is because your internet connection is not great or my internet connection is not great. I have YU internet, so we cannot... God forbid, cast any aspersions on my internet connection. Yes, there are two issues at hand here. The simple reading of the Gemara on Lamed Ches Lamed Tes is that we're dealing with an issue of cooking, but there's another possibility that the issue here is not relevant to cooking, but it's relevant to improving the food or not improving the food. And you get a teeny bit of impression, from the first Rashi in Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. You're right, Rashi, a few lines from now, uses the term Bishul. I have a way of reading that slightly creatively as well, but I'll get to that point in a minute. Ari, you have a comment?
If it's not Bishul, what's the Isur then, right? Because improving the food isn't something.
So if it's not Bishul, what is the Isur?
What is it? Yeah.
So here's the thing. There is a whole school of thought out there, which is found in the Prima Godim, in the Eshel Avram. From now on, by the way, we're dealing with Simin Shin Yod Ches. Until now, we've been dealing with the Dinim Drabonon of Bishul. Those are found in Simin Reish Nun Gimel. Once we started after Yontif, we are talking about the Dinim De'oraisa of Bishul, which is found in Shin Yod Ches. Shin Yod Ches Se'if Dalet in Shulchan Aruch quotes our halacha. The Magen Avram over there, Se'if Shin Ches Vav, has some sort of comment. And the Prima Godim, who is the super commentary on the Magen Avram, the Prima Godim says, you know how to interpret this halacha? It's based on the general rule or malacha number 39. Of the 39 malachos on Shabbos, Number 39 is Makeh B'Patish. Makeh B'Patish is putting the final touches on something. Says the Prima Godim, and it's not just a Prima Godim, it's also a Lavush. And it's not just a Prima Godim and a Lavush. It is also a Nishmas Adam, also the Chaya Adam. They say that, read this source just straight up. Don't give me any fancy interpretations. Read the Mishnah Kuf Mem Hei. Ba b'chanan lufnei HaShabbos, you're allowed to soak it. Lo ba b'chanan lufnei HaShabbos, you can rinse it off. With the exception of this type of fish, maliach yashon, koyas ha'ispinin, shahadachasan, zuhi, gemar, melachton. Because rinsing it off is gemar, melacha. The word gemar, melacha, throughout Meseches Shabbos, means the melacha of Makeh B'Patish. Gemar, melacha means this melacha of when I'm fashioning a utensil, and I'm done with my process, and I do all that final bang on it, right? Or I wrote a book, and I finished writing the book, and now I send it to the binder, and the binder puts it together. That's called Makeh B'Patish. You're finishing a product. It's entirely possible, says the Prima Godim, the Lavush, and the Nishmas Adam, that when we talk about rinsing this fish in hot water, and we say that you are chayiv on it, even though, right, it seems to not be full-fledged cooking, you know why you're chayiv? You're chayiv because of a rule of Makeh B'Patish, a rule of putting that last finishing touch, and the Prima Godim, Lavush, Nishmas Adam, they take the approach that the rule is that there is Makeh B'Patish by Ochlim, that foods are also subject to Makeh B'Patish.
We saw in the Be'er Halacha, he says, he comes to the conclusion that it's not. You can't apply.
Nachon. So the Be'er Halacha quotes this, and the Be'er Halacha says it is completely untenable. Mm-hmm. The Be'er Halacha says that to maintain that there is Makeh B'Patish by food items is impossible, because it's clear that our Gemara is about cooking. He says Rashi says it's about cooking. The Rambam says it's about cooking. All of the Rishonim say it's about cooking. So it can't be Gemar Malacha. Moreover, it can't be Makeh B'Patish. Moreover, says the Be'er Halacha, if there is Makeh B'Patish by food, so even in cases where the Halacha would say this is not Bishul D'Oraisa, let's say, for example, I cook an egg on a handkerchief that was heated in the sun. Right? That's the case in the Mishnah. The Gemara tells me that is called Bishul Midrabanan. That's a rabbinic form of cooking, because I'm cooking with something that was heated in the sun. There's no fire involved. Okay, great. But what are you telling me? It's rabbinic, says the Be'er Halacha. That's a Torah prohibition of Makeh B'Patish. That's a Torah prohibition of putting the final touches on something. So it's not rabbinic, it's a Torah prohibition. Says the Be'er Halacha, the fact that we treat it like rabbinic, the fact that it's clear that this is a rabbinic prohibition, that teaches me that there is no Makeh B'Patish by foods. And the Prima Godim, Lavush, Nishmas Adam, they were nice Jews and all that, but they are just wrong. That's the Be'er Halacha. Now, I would argue, again, I would argue that maybe it's not impossible. Maybe it's not an impossible idea. Now, Jake noted before that Rashi uses the expression of Bishul. Let's read that Rashi. It's the last wide line at the top, going to the first skinny line in Rashi. Hadachasu zehu gemar melachto. Says Rashi, midakari le gemar melachto shinamina zehu bishulo v'chayev. The fact that I use the term, this is gemar melachto, this is its finishing touch, that indicates that this is its cooking and you're obligated. I'm not sure about this. And this might be what we call in Yiddish farkvetched. It might be a difficult forced read of Rashi. But I would say that Rashi is not saying this is cooking. Rashi says, Zehu bishulo. This is its cooking. Meaning to say, the malacha of cooking means, in general, taking something from inedible and through the use of heat, making it edible. In our context, I'm not talking about paradigmatic cooking, like we noted, because the egg and the fish was somewhat edible beforehand. Nonetheless, Zehu Bishulo, this is the same as cooking would be. It's obligated, you're also obligated for it, but I'm not obligated based on the malacha of cooking. Again, this is far-fetched, but I'm obligated, my chiyuv is based on the malacha of makeh bepatish, zehu bishulo. This is the functional equivalent of its cooking. Rashi is not making a statement that this is bishul. Rashi is making a statement, zehu bishulo. Again, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. This is certainly a forced read of the Rashi, but there is some evidence to this read based on what we said beforehand. The fact that we don't use the term bishul in the Mishnah, the fact that the Rambam in Perek Chaf Beis says cooked or soaked, right? So there is some indication that the issue at hand is not really cooking, but the issue at hand is more one of Gemar Melacha, one of Makeh B'Patish. Jake, you
at the end of the day, once we have, how seriously are we going to take the Prima Gadim? Because at best you have a steer in Rashi and a steer in the Rambam, and all the Rishonim that you see are explicitly saying against this, even if you prevent the Rashi and the Rambam are saying this. At the end of the day, how seriously are we taking this opinion that this could be Makeh B'Patish?
Yeah, so how seriously do I take the Makeh B'Patish? So that's what I want to talk about now. Again, within the Rishonim, I don't have anyone who really says Makeh B'Patish in an unquestionable sort of way. I don't have it. But I do have the slight diyukim in the Gemara. And I have Achronim, Prima Gadim, Lavush, Nishmas Adam. Now, let's just first talk about the Bi'ur Halacha.
Really?
Based on the source, yes, Nady.
Out of my own Amiratus, how broadly do we find the category of Makeh B'Patish being applied in the Talmud Bavli?
Okay, so you already hedged your bet. I would say, just as a quick response to your point, certainly less broadly than we find Makeh B'Patish in the Talmud Yerushalmi. But I don't know. Okay, what I'm referring to with Nady is a few things. I'm not 100% sure what you're referring to, but you know, Rabbi Usher Weiss famously cites a Yerushalmi that anything that we know is forbidden, but we don't know why it's forbidden, we will subsume under the category of Makeh B'Patish. I want to come back to this in a few minutes. That basically is making Makeh B'Patish the 14th amendment of halachic, of Hilchos Shabbos, right? Anything that doesn't fall under any category, we'll stop it over there. Right, that is Makeh B'Patish according to the Yerushalmi. Now, Jake, you asked the question on the chat. The fact that the Levush says this doesn't it automatically mean it's wrong. So I'm not saying that I paskin like this Levush, although when they have a Nishmas Odom and a Prima Gadim also, so that certainly offers more support, but I'm just trying to explain this position. So the Bir Halacha says, based on all the questions that we asked, Bir Halacha says that Makke B'Patish categorically does not apply to food items. Why does it categorically not apply? If I understand the Bir Halacha correctly, what he's saying is that the Malachos of Shabbos, the 39 categories of labor, are broken down into different categories. There are different chunks, different units. Of those 39 Malachos, the Mishnah Ayin Gimel, the first, I believe, 11, deal with making food. Zoreya, Choresh, Kotzer, Ma'amer, if I make food, first I plant and then I, right, plow. Why plowing? After planting, we'll talk about that on Ayin Gimel. Then I harvest it. Then I make it into bundles. Then I thresh it. I remove the chaff from the kernel. Then I winnow it. Then I separate the rocks from the kernels of grain. Then I grind it. Then I sift it. Then I knead it. Then I bake it. Those malachos are about food. The first 11 malachos deal with categories of food. Then I have a category in the Mishnah that deals with wool. Remember, in the Mishkan, they had karbanos like a mincha, right? They also had dyes. Dyes are involved in cooking, but what are they dyeing? They're dyeing wool. They're dyeing curtains. The curtains are made by shearing the sheep, by blanching that wool, etc., etc., etc. That's called the process involved of weaving. Then I also have malachos that are involved in the process of leather, tanning. Then I also have malachos that are involved in the process of combining items. I tie it together, etc. I have different categories in the Mishnah. The categories are the categories of food, the categories of wool, the categories related to the hide of the animals. Then I have categories in the Mishnah that involve the actual construction of the Mishkan, which is writing and building. You write in the sense of the Gemara says that they would label the beams. This is a number one. That's why some of the Achrayim say you're supposed to label the beams of your sukkah when you take your sukkah down every year, so that your sukkah represents the Mishkan and you put it up in the same place. It's just sound advice anyway, because from personal experience, I could tell you that when you try to put up the sukkah and it wasn't labeled, you're like, how come this isn't fitting together? And then you have to dismantle and put it back together. So they would label it. That's the malacha of writing. The final malacha is called Makke B'Patish. Makke B'Patish is the final malacha in the building of the Mishkan. After it's built, you do that final bang. Or maybe we're talking about building the Kelim in the Mishkan, and you do the final bang. It's about building. So building, says the Bir Halacha, if I understand it correctly, it's a different category than food. And the Bir Halacha is telling me that the first category of malachos, plowing and planting, etc., apply to food. But the category that applies to building does not apply to food. These are not intersecting categories. And therefore, the Bir Halacha says, you know what? There is no Makke B'Patish on food. That is his comment. And this seems to be a accepted approach in many of the Sfarim, in the modern day poskim. Many accept this Bir Halacha. However, Ari, yeah?
Yeah, just as a practical matter, it would seem that if Makke B'Patish applied to food, then you couldn't cut the roast or put chicken on the plate or make a salad. Correct. All the things that are the final touch, which we do on Shabbos, right?
So if Makke B'Patish applies to food, so we have to deal with the question, basically, how do I platter food? How do like anything, it's the final touch. It's very difficult.
Can you garnish?
How can you garnish?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I should add that there is an entire literature relating to Makkabe Patish itself. We'll talk about this more in a few minutes, but it's possible that Makkabe Patish is, I do the final touch of something, and then later on, I use it. I do the final touch, I build that utensil, I don't use it right away, I put it aside, I use it later. With melachos that involve food, anything that is part of the process of eating is categorically permitted. For example, the Tshuvas HaRashba notes, I actually gave you this Tshuvas HaRashba at the end of today. I put it on the sources. The Tshuvas HaRashba in Chelek Dalet Siman Ayin Hey. The Rashba asks a question. How are you able to eat food on Shabbos? You are grinding the food when you eat it, because you put it in your teeth. What difference does it make if you take a grinder, right, and you bang that vegetable and you cut it up, or if you put the vegetable in your mouth and you grind it with your teeth? So the Rashba says, you know what? Anything that's derech achila is permitted. Anything that's involved in the process of eating is permitted. Therefore, right, there's no issue of grinding when you put food in your mouth. Therefore, I would say that if I garnish my food, that is not the malacha of Makkabe Patish, certainly, because I'm garnishing the food right before I eat it. Now, how far before is considered right before? This is a discussion with respect to Borer and Tolchein, etc. Many of the malachos, what's considered immediate use, right? And how broadly I define immediate. But those are questions of details. On a fundamental level, malachos of food, we have a kula of immediacy. That, I think, is an important point. Now, the Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha assumes that as a categorical matter, there is no Makkabe Patish on food. However, the Shvisas HaShabbos, I noted to you, I think, on one occasion, although I forgot to look at it again today, the Shvisas HaShabbos is described by Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik in his article, Rupshan Reconstruction, as the way halacha used to be done before the Mishnah Berurah came and took over the world. It's basically stories and analysis of sugyas, and a lot of conversations that he had with the Gedolim in Yerushalayim. So he tells you that Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank came into the house and we were discussing this issue of Makkabe Patish by food, etc. It's like a fascinating sefer, which to some extent is the way halacha operated until the Mishnah Berurah came and changed halacha from being mimetic to being a text-based limud. That's Dr. Soloveitchik's article. There's a lot to say about it, whether or not it's really correct. But the Shvisas HaShabbos says, the Mishnah Berurah is obviously wrong because it's against the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, if a person takes garlic, Haiman Deshachik Tuma, you take the garlic and you do various actions on the garlic to soften it and then to chop it up into pieces. And then finally you mince that garlic after it's already chopped. Like I know at home, I cut the garlic with a knife. First you peel the garlic, then you cut it. Then you put the garlic in your little garlic press and it comes out as, right, minced garlic or whatever. Says the Yerushalmi, it's on Mem Tesam and Aleph, Badape HaYerushalmi. Yerushalmi writes, Haman Deshachik Tumas Chayev Mishum Makkabe Patish. Makkabe Patish! Aye, it's food. Apparently the Yerushalmi holds that there is Makkabe Patish on food. That's clear in the Yerushalmi. Now, what about the proofs that the Bir Halacha brought? The proofs that if there's Makkabe Patish on food, so how come if I cook something in the sunlight, how come I'm not obligated as Makkabe Patish? How can that be permitted? How come I'm not obligated for Makkabe Patish? So the Shvisas HaShabbos says, you know what? It can't be Makkabe Patish in that case
because maybe Makabit Patish involves that you're active. The paradigmatic case of Makabit Patish is I take that hammer and I bang it. Right? Or the case of Makabit Patish is not just that I bang my hammer, right? I squeeze the garlic. I'm actively doing something. If I put food in the sun and then the sun acts on it, the final result of that is taking place not because I was actively involved, but I'm passive. I'm now lying down in my hammock. I am relaxing, and suddenly the food becomes already. There is no Makabit Patish if you are passive. This point is made by Rashi and Ayin Dalet Amid Beis. Right? The Gemara has a case of if a person makes a barrel on Shabbos. So, right, how many prohibitions do you violate? So Rashi, the Gemara tells me you violate 11. Rashi over there counts. What are the 11? And Rashi says, and don't include Makabit Patish as one of those 11, because there's no Makabit Patish when you are passive. You put it in the oven cooks it. That's not right. The oven cooks, remember the way, this is like the everyone's favorite college course, basket weaving. No, you basically, you make the reeds soft and then you weave it into a basket, then you have to harden them afterwards. So you put it in some sort of oven as the final touch to heat it. Well, that's not Makabit Patish because it's passive. So for technical reasons, they argue that all the cases in the Bir Halacha can be deflected. And there might be Makabit Patish on food in the fundamental way. It's not a categorical statement, there's no Makabit Patish on food. But nonetheless, in most cases, you will not violate Makabit Patish on food because either we have the immediacy factor that any item, any malacha related to food that happens immediately before you eat it is permitted by definition. Alternatively, if it happens passively, so according to Rashi, there is no Makabit Patish. Alternatively, the Shvisas HaShabbos writes that if you just put two items in proximity, one to the other, that by definition can't be a malacha. A malacha has to involve some sort of change. With the exception of the malacha of carrying on Shabbos, every malacha involves a change. If I take a plate and I organize the vegetables very nicely, there's no real change over there. It's just a change of location. Changing location is not a malacha. Now, this all became very relevant. People know about the company called SodaStream, right? So SodaStream, when I was a kid, actually, we used to make our own seltzer in a different sort of way. We had like these things, they looked like bullets, and you would put them in a bottle and you'd make fresh seltzer. It actually was very good, right? The SodaStream is the same type of thing, right? You are adding carbonation to the water, different, not necessarily water, could be various flavors, right? That's SodaStream. Are you allowed to make seltzer on Shabbos? So this was a huge discussion in the poskim. A huge discussion. And the Shvisas HaShabbos tells us the story. He says he at first lived in Europe, then he moved to Yerushalayim. I forgot where. I think he was from a town called Maltzen in Europe. I don't know where that is. When he moved to Yerushalayim, so he says that he heard for the first time that Rabbi Yehoshua Leib Diskin, who was the Rav in Yerushalayim, said that you're not allowed to make seltzer on Shabbos. And he couldn't believe it. He said, why not? So they tell him, oh, you can't make seltzer on Shabbos because it's Makabit Patish. You're making the final touch. So the Shvisas HaShabbos says, final touch? What are you talking about? If I add sugar to my tea, is that a malacha? Right? This is the final touch. Or I change, this significant change, because my tea now has sugar in it. Or making the tea itself.
right? That's not the final touch, right? There's a question. Maybe that's tzoveya. Maybe it's dying. We'll have to talk about that issue as well. But there's no makom patish. You add sugar to the tea. So the Shvisas HaShabbos explains, yeah, when you add sugar to tea, basically you're just putting items in proximity one to the other. The sugar is now close to the tea. The fact that the sugar dissolved in the tea doesn't mean that there was any real change, because what you can do, if you know what you're doing, is you can remove the sugar from the tea after. You could boil the tea out and then you'll have your sugar again. It's possible. There's no real change. However, right, this is his expression. I think actually he writes beautifully. He writes, Be'or hadavar, yesh harkava shchunit, v'harkava mizgit. There is, harkava means combining items, shchunit, in just in space. And then there's harkava mizgit, which is like a chemical change. When you mix, kasher tarev chol im kemach, if you mix sand with flour, so all you're doing is you're putting them one next to the other. Right? When you add sugar into water, you're only putting them one next to the other. However, when you make the seltzer, you are making a chemical change in it. You can never get that carbon out of the water. Because it's a chemical change, Reb Yitzchak Maltzin, the Shvisas HaShabbos says, maybe that's a defense of this approach of the of Rabbi Shor Leib Diskin, that you're not allowed to make seltzer on Shabbos.
I mean, it's a chemical change in as much that dissolving sugar is a chemical change. That, you know, so, with OH group moving around.
Right, that when you dissolve sugar, you can undo the chemical reaction. Again, I'm not a chemist.
You can get carbon dioxide out of seltzer also.
And then, can you?
Yeah, that's what happens when you shake it. All the bubbles come out.
You leave it open.
So, I hear. I don't, again, I'm not sure. I'm not enough of an expert. I'm just reading to you what the Shvisas HaShabbos suggests. And you're saying that you can get the carbon out of the seltzer. And it can be, will it become plain, ordinary water? Or there's going to be some difference?
I don't know.
So now,
what's the bottom line on seltzer?
We'll get there in 2 minutes.
Okay.
We'll get there in 2 minutes.
Carbonation comes out by itself also. The sugar is never going to come out of the tea. You leave it.
Unless you do something. Right, absolutely.
The bubbles are going to come out.
The bubbles will come out if you leave the seltzer. I one of the constant issues I have at home is I tell the kids, you got to tighten the cap, no? Like, if you don't tighten the cap. Okay. The Shvisas HaShabbos writes that Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank came over. Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank said, no, making seltzer on Shabbos is absolutely permitted. Nothing to talk about. Later on in the Sefer, he quotes that one time he was at a Shabbos meal with someone in Yerushalayim who himself was a student of the Ksav Sofer. The Ksav Sofer is the son of the Chsam Sofer. And he said that the Chsam Sofer himself used to make seltzer on Shabbos. So the Shvisas HaShabbos says, making seltzer on Shabbos, absolutely permitted, nothing to talk about. There is, however, and that seems to be the consensus opinion in Poskim. The consensus opinion in Poskim is that making seltzer on Shabbos, SodaStream, is permitted. However, there are some who are still fighting the good fight. Chacham Ovadia Yosef wrote a book on Hilchos Shabbos. It's one of his earlier books. It's called Leviat Chen. In Chacham Ovadia's book, Leviat Chen, he says, well, maybe if the reason why there is no makom patish on food is because of the immediacy idea. So unlike the cases in our Gemara, where you are fixing the food and then you're going to eat it right away, when you make seltzer, you're not going to eat it until later on. You'll make seltzer, and then you leave it for a while before you drink it. So therefore, perhaps, it should be forbidden to make seltzer based on Makabe Patish. There's no Makabe Patish in Argamara. Argamara is talking about the egg and the fish. There's no Makabe Patish in those cases because it is consumed right away. But something that there's a delay between when you do it and when you consume it, maybe that's Makabe Patish. Therefore, he's fighting the good fight that there should be Makabe Patish on seltzer. Years ago, I dated this tshuva at one point. If I'm not mistaken, Alexander Graham Bell patented the telephone in the early 1850s. And around 1860, Reb Yitzchak Shmelkis, who was the Rav in Lviv, wrote a tshuva about the use of electricity on Shabbos. It's probably the earliest tshuva about using electricity on Shabbos. This is the big issue in Judaism, no? Use of electricity on Shabbos. So Yitzchak Shmelkis says it's forbidden. Just like making seltzer is forbidden on Shabbos, you can't use electricity. His expression is, when you take something and it goes mimaves l'chaim, you take it and it was dead water beforehand. And now the water is all bubbly and like it's swimming around in your cup. It's now seltzer, not water. That is, he says, the same as electricity. Again, when I'm talking about electricity now, I don't mean when I create a circuit and the load at the end of that circuit is an incandescent bulb. An incandescent bulb is a fire in halacha. That's like lighting the fire. But if I have a fan, that is the load at the end of my circuit. So it's just spinning around. Says Reb Yitzchak Shmelkis, it's forbidden to do that on Shabbos because it goes mimavas l'chaim. It was dead beforehand. It wasn't moving. Now it's moving. That's a malacha. Use of electricity, he says, is forbidden, just like making seltzer is forbidden. When I was a rabbi of a shul a few years ago, I was Rabbi Mount Sinai, as I've mentioned. So I gave a halacha series, and someone asked me to talk about electricity on Shabbos. So I began with the earliest truth about electricity on Shabbos, from Yitzchak Shmelkis. And I said, and just like you can't make seltzer on Shabbos, you can't use electricity on Shabbos. And like the people are like, not make seltzer on Shabbos, you just destroyed our Shabbos meal. Now, there are some poskim who, as a matter of practical halacha, say you can't make seltzer on Shabbos. The Tzitz Eliezer says this, etc. The consensus view is not like that. We still assume that you can't use electricity on Shabbos, even though we assume you can't make seltzer. We'll have to develop that idea more as the semester goes on. But let me just conclude with a point that the Bir Halacha makes at the end of his essay, which is actually found in the Pri Megadim and in the Nishmas Adam as well. And that point is maybe there's only Makabe Patish, when I take something that was not usable beforehand and I make it usable. But if I have something that was somewhat usable and then I make it usable, so maybe there is no Makabe Patish. Now, if that's the case, that actually would solve our entire issue in the Gemara. How come our Gemara is speaking about Bishul? Again, according to the simple read of the Gemara, not according to the creative approach I was taking at the beginning of today's shiur. But the simple reading of our Gemara is that the issue at hand is Bishul. Why not Makabe Patish? I'll tell you why not. Because a raw egg is edible. And that tuna, when it's raw, is edible. And Makabe Patish means... Makabe Patish by food means that you take something that was not usable and now you make it usable. Now, I'm not sure that this is correct. Like, if Makabe Patish, if my example is that final bang on the cup was pretty much usable beforehand. It just didn't look nice. I put the cover on my book, right? But for some reason, and this is clear, if you read the Bir Halacha, this is what he's saying. He quotes in the Nishmas Adam and the Pri Megadim says this as well, there in Seif Katan Tesvav. They all say that there's only Makabe Patish if you go from unusable to usable. Right now, this is the exact opposite of what I was saying. I was saying that there's only bishul when you go from unusable to usable. They're saying that there is only makeh v'patish when you go from unusable to usable. And of course, this is also relevant for the way we began our conversation, whether we're talking about a hard-boiled egg or a soft-boiled egg, etc., and the status of raw eggs. I think all these issues are connected. So these are the points I wanted to make today. Ellie, if you have a brief question, because I'm trying to leave in 2 minutes to go and daven mincha. Yeah.
No, I think I understand. I was just asking. I think we're talking in the Be'er Halacha. I was just going to ask if makeh v'patish is only on if makeh v'patish is only from unusable to usable, then seltzer and but correct. Yeah, we're talking about within the we're
seltzer talking about would not be subject to makeh v'patish because it was usable beforehand. It was very fine, young, wonderful water, right? So that would not be makeh v'patish. Again, the discussion of making seltzer on Shabbos is a discussion that goes on to this very day. I think the consensus view among poskim is that it is permitted. In the Shmiras Shabbos Kol Chasa, he permits making seltzer on Shabbos. Nonetheless, I do think that at least for use in a shiur, when I'm talking about makeh v'patish by food items, we have to mention seltzer. I would add, however, that I think the Be'er Halacha's categorical approach over here is not accepted. His approach that there is no makeh v'patish on food items, I think, is dismissed based on that Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is quoted by the Tshuvas HaRashba. Yerushalmi is quoted by the Hagos Mordechai in Perek Chavis. So it's a Yerushalmi that was known by the Rishonim, that the Rishonim cite. And based on that, I think there, I would say based on that, so there can be makeh v'patish on foods, but we have to get into the details of makeh v'patish, whether it applies passively, whether it does not apply when it's immediately used, etc. So those approaches, I think, are more correct than the categorical approach that there's no makeh v'patish on foods. Okay, gentlemen. So I wish you a excellent day, and I look forward to seeing you, Mi'atzeh Hashem, tomorrow, and we'll continue these conversations.